Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. I mean, this is the main podcast we have, so it's a Bitcoin podcast. It's much more than the Bitcoin podcast. It's talking about blockchain. In today's financial world, however, the last few weeks for Bitcoin have been phenomenal. We have Daniele Menzi, but he probably is counting his $1 trillion right now, as he's one of those lucky persons that knows about the world of decentralized ledger technologies and things like that. But hi, Daniele, first of all, thanks for coming and joining us.
Hey, Dario, I'm always a pleasure being here.
Well, Daniele, it's not just the massive rise in value of the cryptocurrencies that the last few weeks have been of worthy of notice. But towards the end of January, the beginning of February, we've noticed what some people have said it's an epochal happening, something very newsworthy. It's the small guys have managed to win over the big finance companies. So we're referring to some of the things you might have heard if you're out there, AMC or GameStop, the places where there have been short position. Some companies were trying to bet against this company that are probably not doing too well. But the small people, if I understand correctly, fought against and they challenged, they talked about it in Reddit and in other online conversation and started buying and increasing the prices of this. All of this, for you, Daniele, to tell us more. I mean, through your points on DeFi, which is a different podcast, if you haven't listened to it, go back. Your points about Bitcoin, we talked about cryptocurrencies, we talked about blockchains, that technologies are there that are changing fundamentally how we, society, works, how finance works, how technology works. Now, can you tell us a bit, what do you think that has happened in the last few weeks?
Yeah, so first and foremost, since we're touching a very sensitive matter, is always worth reminding that we're not giving any type of investment advice, but we're here only for entertainment and education. That's very, very important. When we touch discussions about structured finance, it's a very sensitive topic because there are a lot of people there putting a lot of money and being so passionate about it. So it's very, very important that people listen to us as for fun mostly and to educate themselves. Coming back to the topic of Wall Street Bets, that is the name of the group on Reddit, which by the way I'm following since quite a while, which count nowadays approximately 7 million people, okay, into Reddit. And in very simple terms, and over, this is not a joke actually, the whole saga happened in a platform called Robinhood. That all we know that Robinhood is the guy that is robbing the rich and is giving to the poor. But in this context, Robinhood was robbing the rich and giving to the poor. So and in fact, what happened is that the idea of how traditional finance has been working on for ages, for decades, onto the stock exchanges, onto the traditional markets, has been reversed by having the little guys like me and you winning the game against the big guys, like the guys in Wall Street. And this happened because of an organized activity by the small guys over social media. They were encouraging each other to buy the stock and being long on that stock, while on the other side, there were the big guys that were shorting the stocks. And actually, we don't know all the details about it, but they were shorting even more than 100% of the stock value of the company and the stock availability. So that's kind of weird. And perhaps we will know a little bit more in the coming weeks. But the result is that it's called infinite loop has happened, while people shorting were forced to buy at an even higher price, but people that are holding the stocks were not willing to buy to sell. At the end of the day, this has created kind of a spiral loop. Well, the price has spiked in value, reaching, if I'm not mistaken, $300, while people were shorting an insanely low amount. And the result of this, there are big firms that have lost billion and billion of dollars worth of their wrong bets. But the, you know, this is not over, because the stock is still there, is still listed for a period of time in some platform. You know, I was mentioning Robinhood. The stock was prevented to be bought, but it will only was available, and we don't know what is going to happen. But at the end of the day, this open up a bigger reflection on, first of all, what is broken and what can we do better to prevent or to handle a little bit better things like this.
Well, one comment when we talk about Robin Hood stealing from the rich, giving to the poor. Some people say that was stealing from the rich, giving to the less rich. poor, because there's still a large group of people that don't have access to the technology, the markets. And this is a very US-centric experience. I mean, Robin Hood is such a easy, approachable experience. You don't have to pay big commissions, I believe, as well, to actually running some of those bets on the stocks. That's great, because we're talking about, in any case...
On Robinhood, can I say something on Robinhood? Because there is also a misconception of what Robinhood is. Okay, Robinhood, you know, beside the guy that is robbing the rich and is giving to the less rich, okay, with a hat, is a brokerage platform. And I just want to make a point about the fintech, because this platform was built back in 2013 in a so-called, well, it's not so-called, in Menlo Park, so Silicon Valley. So it's a fintech born in Silicon Valley next to Facebook in the same street, actually. That was kind of a platform, an app that is supposed to challenge somehow, at least in the perception, what Wall Street was doing on a traditional platform and traditional establishment. While in fact now people realize that you know, a brokerage platform is a platform that kind of improve efficiency in how orders are being managed. But essentially, it's true that it's an application where you can trade for free, but they make money, okay? And how do they make money? They make money because once you you send a trade, okay, you trade, for example, stock, the moment before you press a button, in fact, there is a kind of a signal that is being sent to market maker to execute those trades. This is where market making making money. And by this, you know, back and forth flow, okay, order flow, they make a lot of money. So in fact, there is like in telco, you push the traffic towards a wholesale or an interconnection carrier. This is the same they're doing before the call is established on the other side. It's the same for them. The trade is established. So they route the orders or the trades to market maker and then take profit based, for example, on the spread of that stock. Okay. So, you know, all this is nothing new. Okay. So it's true that common understanding, it's a fintech platform. It's super cool from a UI, UX point of view. But the rules that the platform has embedded are very, very traditional. Okay.
Well, I like listening to you, Daniele. Sometimes I wish we had this call almost every day, because you're making some important parallels here. The first question some people would ask is, why is MEF talking about blockchain? Why is it talking about finance? Why is it talking? And I think you just hit it now with this comparison as well. Is sometimes we read the world from different perspectives. So interestingly, now some of those challenges that the telecom structures have seen are now deploying to the finance world. And because everything is becoming more horizontal, now those are the new reality that we all need to live in, including the telecom companies. So some of the impacts of these is now going to take place to companies that are members of MEF or non-members of MEF out there that are selling into content, advertising, and or telecommunication services. So you mentioned at one point an overall theory around it. Is it, do I correct say it correctly, is it decentralization is how you would describe this, or how would you?
Yeah, so first of all, there are two type of topics that are worth emphasizing. Number one, there are kind of systemic issues, which are kind of systemic issues. In the specific case of GME, what happened is that there were guys from one side that were shorting the stock. So this means they were betting against, you know, price going down because of fundamentals. Okay. So you analyze the stock, you say this guy is selling cities, you know, Blockbuster and all the others went bust. And especially in the era of pandemic where everything is online and virtual, this guy selling cities in the store, no chance they will go high. That was there, you know. Their fundamental analysis might be right or wrong. That was their fundamental. But these guys have applied only logic based on fundamentals, while the other guys, they didn't care about what the fundamental is for this stock to price this stock properly. They say, we believe the stock will go high in value because people believe that the stock will go high in value. It's called hype or momentum trading. Okay. So then, the two worlds that collided were, you know, on the top were, you know, retail versus Wall Street, or retail versus institutional, if you want to say hedge fund versus the small investors. While on the macro, from a more behavioral point of view, we're talking about fundamental versus momentum. So those that believe that it's so important, the emotional attachment to price a stock value versus the fundamental, which rigidly define whether the stock is priced properly or not. And those two have the same value. And who wins? So far, actually, the emotional trading won against the fundamental trading. Who knows what is going to happen on the GME stock and on others. But this has given us a very, very clear lesson. We should not underevaluate momentum trading, number one. That's the... And the systemic issue is that in case traders or the markets behave because of hype, okay, as in this case, the rules that are defined to maintain the systemic equilibrium in the back, like liquidity, like the clearinghouse, which are in the back to ensure that trades happen, all this system has collapsed. At least that's our perception, okay? So, and how decentralization help to this extent? Decentralization is not the solution to everything. Decentralization is a mean to rethink what today doesn't work in certain conditions, okay? Right now, we already have a decentralized ecosystem, a decentralized protocols. We already have it, mostly in finance. And this can be extended also to other areas, like in telco, for example, mostly on the settlement side. But all this should allow us to rethink what we have been doing so far. It didn't work well.
So you're saying, let's see if I can come up with a couple of lessons there. The first is that there is a special financial story, and you say whether it's the hype or the fundamentals review, or some would say the organizations are flowing of information as well, given that for the first time, people could coalesce and work together, something that some people would even question whether it's legal or not, but we'll see about that, what people have said. But the overall decentralized model, which we allow now, the new communication tools we have, the availability for single people to actually intercept trading and other opportunities of interact without people in between, is now creating new flows of information, money transactions that were not expected before. So people did not exactly know that at this point, that you know, after platforms such as Robinhood was and Reddit were allowed, put it all together, a communication platform, a financial brokerage firm, and then some specific in the markets, and then you can create mayhem in the financial industry. And but that's one example, and tomorrow could be, well, maybe content, or tomorrow could be your telecommunications industry.
Anything,
as well.
Absolutely. But this, you know, if you think about how this has been organized, so first of all, it's not really true that what Reddit has done, it was it didn't have any fundamental. Let's say, as I've heard several times, there were a lot of fundamentals. So fundamentals in the reasoning, not fundamental in strict financial definition, meaning I assess this real stock value. Fundamentals means we believe that if we go this, the stock will go high. That's the fundamental of their thinking. And we believe that because the price will go high and we will tell people to buy, the stock will go even higher. And by the time the guy that was shorting the stock, we realize that there's no availability of stock because no one is selling, they will try even to increase the bid. So this means increasing the price and creating a huge asymmetry. This is called the short squeeze, okay? In which at the end of the day, the prices might go up to, I don't know, $1,000, right? While they were shorting at 50, at 40, at 20. So for them, there would be a huge, huge loss. So the lesson learned for this is, first of all, not to think that everything that is flowing on social media is necessarily garbage and is corrupted. I believe once people bet or use their money to place, in this case, a trade, and they risk their capital and they're aware, that's the key point that you mentioned before about regulation. It's highlighting the risk. It's very, very, it's essential. It's not very important. It's very essential. You have to know that if you do this, you might lose everything. Are you ready? Yes, that's your choice. If you accept this type of risk and you believe to a story that you read on Reddit, that's your problem. I would like you to encourage to listen to whoever you want and to place your money in whatever opportunity, instead of thinking about how can we make sure people get access to optimal information. You never have optimal information, because at the end of the day, when you have someone willing to sell, there is always kind of, I show you what I want to sell and never show you the risk. Okay.
I want to play a game with you, Daniele, to find a bit of a summary of what's happening. And the game is winners and losers. So I'll ask you, I'll give you one winner, then you tell me if that's correct. And then I'll give you a loser, and you tell me if that also is correct. And then we can keep on going. Now, I would say, for what I listen, the fundamental, the question and so on, the specific, apart from the big theory behind it, what's happening, one type of companies would earn a lot of attention, if not money right now, and that's AI machine learning. Because one thing that is starting to become more apparent is you need to listen to the fundamentals. You need to be more careful and listen to the social media. Actually, that's becoming another market signal, which you don't see inheriting price straight away, but might have a consequence. So I would say big winners are all of the AI and sentiment companies that are out there telling you what people are talking about.
Absolutely, this is key. And then in the case of GME stock, so GameStop, probably you heard that there were a lot of comments by people against Robinhood, about 100,000 comments actually, that were filtered out from Google. This is what I read on the news, because there were suspicion they were fake comments, while people rioting on Reddit saying, hey, it's us, you know? It was us that placed those comments. So you have to keep those 100,000 negative comments that will, you know, squeeze the stars of Robinhood from 4 to 1. At the end of the day, in this case, AI has played the role to kind of mitigate, we don't know, obviously, those 100,000 bad reviews of an app, and eventually it can kill the rating of the app.
And some of the losers, the other side, I'll tell you, it's the other side of a coin here. I mean, will the bot win and the people lose? Because you only need, you know, 10 people to write nice, intelligent comments, but you can have hundreds of thousands of comments being produced every minute by bots and trying to influence the market and so on. Are we going to see a new fraud? Is the consumer possibly going to suffer from this?
I mean, we will never be able to stop fraud. Fraud is inside human nature. So people bribing since ever. And when there is money attached to it, it's even worse. So we cannot, there is a systemic issue in trying to think of how to prevent fraud that will have even a bigger impact on the real economy than trying to let it flowing. And if something happens, stop it, okay? So in the case of, in this very case, to me, I do personally find an issue that because of you allow such a very high risk practice in shorting so massively a stock, and by the way, this is the third stock in history that has been shorted with this proportion, but there are two before than this that will be shorted at even a higher level. You know what is the first ever shorted in terms of volume stock? It's Tesla. And the second one is Apple. So it's not like, you know, very small company having 100 million of market cap. We're talking about companies having trillion of market caps. So the first two biggest company in the world. So, and Elon Musk, last week, he tweeted about such a bad practice in shorting the stocks that are kind of a criminal activity because the intention is to kill a company and people leaving because of the jobs of these companies. So to me, the bigger reflection is there are some systemic issues that are designed to prevent bigger collapse that by themselves incentivize, let me say, a bad behavior. If we work in a decentralized ecosystem, you will never face, if it's properly designed, you will never face this, because as long as you have a certain liquidity that is ensured by clearinghouse, this is the same in telco, for example. If you can, you can settle, you know, certain amount of minutes towards a destination, and you have a certain collateral in the back that guarantee that, you know, this flow at the end of the day will be paid back from the other side, you will never exceed this capacity, because when you get to 100% of the capacity of the network, of your financial capacity, then you stop it, right? So in the traditional finance, this, if we see here, it didn't stop. It continued until someone raised a hand and say, now you stop it. Now you stop trading. That's what happened in the case of Robinhood. So Robinhood, being a central authority, decided, we don't know who decided, we don't know who's in the back, we don't care. That's not the topic. The topic is they can decide at which moment in time to stop trades. Even though the stock was going high and people were becoming millionaire and even more, if you stop buying, then you restrict access. That's, to me, bad. And this is a typical nature of the centralized system. While in a decentralized ecosystem, as long as there's liquidity and as long there is, you know, trades, so back and forth, then the market maker are automatically working if the conditions on the back work. So that's the systemic advantage of working in a decentralized ecosystem as opposed to centralized.
Daniele, thank you very much. On that, we might close the podcast, but I assume we'll have to come back and talk about these. And also, listen to what people have said. If you have any comments, do share with us, because this is a bit of a gym for the brain. See what happens, what could happen in the future. And we will have to wait many years to see all the results of all the things that are happening here. But I'm glad they say that next time we'll still count on digital, you know, the digital transformation observer with Daniele. Daniele Menzi.
Absolutely. Yes. But this is, you know, it's the 2021 will make 2020. I'm not saying nothing, but it will make 2020. That will be difficult. But 2021 will definitely be interesting to follow in terms of all the technological developments surrounding centralized versus decentralized approach. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you again, Daniele. And until we'll speak again on our next podcast. Thank you.
Pleasure here. Thank you.
Bye-bye.